Good morning, councillors.
Good morning, Mayor.
Notice of meeting of council, Tuesday, 23rd September 2025. In accordance with the local government meeting procedures regulations 2015, notice is hereby given that an ordinary meeting of Central Highlands Council is scheduled to be held in the council chamber, Hamilton, on Tuesday, 23rd of September 2025, commencing at 9 a.m. with the business of the meeting to be in accordance with the following agenda paper. In accordance with the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Part 2, Division 1, a notice of the meeting was published on council website on the 1st of August 2024. General Manager's Certification. Pursuant to Section 65(1) of the Local Government Act 1993, I hereby certify with respect to the advice, information and or recommendation provided for the guidance of council in this agenda that A, such advice, information or recommendation has been given by a person who has the qualifications or experience necessary to give such advice, and B, where an advice is given by a person who does not have the required qualifications or experience, that person has obtained and taken into account the advice from an approximately qualified or experienced person. Section 65(2) forbids council from deciding any matter which requires the advice of a qualified person without considering that advice. Dated 18th of September by Stephen Mackey, the Acting GM. So we'll go to our agenda. And the meeting commenced at 9. There's an audio recording disclaimer that you're very much aware of. I'll just finish the last two paragraphs. That the Mayor advises the meeting and members of the public that council meetings, not including closed sessions, are audio recorded and published on council's website in accordance with council's policy 2017-50. The Mayor also advises that members of the public are not permitted to make audio recordings of council meetings without prior approval by being granted. Acknowledgement of country. I acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, the Tasmanian Aboriginal people, past, present and future. The conduct of the meeting. Central Highlands takes safety seriously. We have a duty to ensure that we provide a safe workplace for our employees, councillors, contractors and members of the public while present at council workplaces. These premises form part of council's workplace, and it is expected that everyone who attends council meetings will behave in a polite and respectful manner. People should refrain from using offensive or derogatory language or comments, and not be aggressive, threatening or speak in a hostile manner. Present is myself, Deputy Mayor Allwright, Councillor Miller, Councillor Honour, Councillor Cassidy, Councillor Hall, Acting General Manager Stephen Mackey, Katrina, our CEO, and in the arena, the gallery, we have Damien Vester, our reporter, Steve Lyne and John Jones. Consideration of supplementary items to the agenda. Included in this will be Councillor Miller's closed item agenda.
Apologies.
Did we have apologies? Oh, I missed apologies, sorry. Councillor Meacham's an apology. Two is consideration of supplementary items to the agenda. As I said, Councillor Miller has a closed item. I have a mover, please, Councillor Hall, and a seconder, Councillor Honour. Any comments from the mover?
No, ma'am.
From the seconder?
No.
From Councillor Hall's? Then I'll put this for the vote. Please raise your hands in favour of this. That is carried. Thanking you. Three is declaration of pecuniary interest and conflict of interest by councillors and staff.
Yeah, I have an item 4.1 in the closed meeting.
And I have one in 8.3.
Acting GM is 4.1. In closed. And Councillor Miller, what was yours?
8.3 in open.
8.3. Yes. Okie dokie. Is that the CWA one?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 8.1, isn't it?
8.1.
Oh, sorry.
You're talking about your notice of motion.
I thought it was 8.3. Okay, 8.1. Okay, good. Minutes, confirmation of the draft minutes of 19th of August. A mover, please. Councillor Honour, Councillor Forright. Any comments, Councillor Honour?
No.
Councillor Allwright?
No.
Councillor Laws? Okay. So those in favour of the recommendation, please raise your hands. Okay, that is carried. Thank you. Notification of council workshops. A workshop was held on the 26th of August and the 9th of September. 5.1, future workshops. The next proposed workshop will be on the 7th of October at Bothwell at 9 a.m.
Can I make my... we've got an audit panel, so it has to be after that one.
Well, what time's the audit?
9. Have we got an audit panel meeting?
I'll have to check it.
Yeah, so it might have to be after that.
Yep. Look, the thing is, we'll deal with it. Yep.
Yeah. And after the workshop is a meeting for Councillor Laws to do with the recruitment. Councillor Cassidy.
I don't know if others are aware of seeing the email from Stephen Blackadder, but we've got a few more requests as well, in addition to the 7th. Let's see here. He's talking about the 7th, he's talking about the
27th.
Oh,
yes,
31st.
Yes,
yeah, that's enclosed. Okay. Yep, that's all covered, Councillor. Thank you. Yep. 6 is public question time. In accordance with Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015, the Council conducted a public question time forum to enable members of the public to ask questions on Council-related matters. I won't go through all the dot points on this. I'd best go through the... A member of the public may give written notice to the General Manager 7 days before a meeting of a question to be put to the meeting. The chairperson may invite any member of the public present at a meeting to ask questions without notice relating to activities of the council, subject to the provisions of clause 2 below. Once question time commences, the chairperson will determine the order in which the questions are heard. Questions may relate to any business of council capable of being discussed in the open portion of the meeting and which is not listed as an item for consideration on the agenda for the council meeting. Steve, Laurie.
I had a couple of people ask me, and I've got a rough idea myself. I wonder if you could clarify, or someone else on the council or Stephen, exactly what constitutes business that finds its way into closed sessions of council.
I might hand that over to our acting GM, Stephen.
Thanks for that.
That's
okay. Off the top of my head, I think it's section 15, it gives you the details of what can be discussed in a closed meeting of council. So that's where it sits. There's rules around what can be dealt with, and they're stipulated in the Act.
Yep. Okay. Councillor Cassidy.
Sure. Tenders. That's one example. Another example would be anything that's commercial in confidence. To a council and municipality, etc. Just common sense stuff.
And also, if we need to talk about a person.
Yeah.
Or financial, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you, Stephen. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, Madam Mayor, excuse me, if I may. The last few, sorry for the recording, Damien Vester.
The last few council agendas have included reports of that include information from the council that is sent to the media. Now, my observation is that the media seems to be the Highland Digest and nothing else. So I put the invitation out there that any information that is sent to the Highland Digest or anywhere else is very welcome to be sent to the New Norfolk News.
Yes.
I'm very keen to promote what's happening here. A recent example, I guess, of something that I didn't know about was the meeting coming up next week to discuss the Hamilton bicentenary. And so I did see that and very quickly gave that a mention in the current issue of the paper. So I hope that I can be of assistance to the council, because our publishing schedule is fortnightly rather than monthly. So in particular, if something misses the digest, there's still an opportunity to get it into the paper. And also we do have a website as well. So just that invitation, that anything that's sent, please have the relevant officers send it to Norfolk News.
And thank you, Damien. I must thank you for the way that you have added some council issues, business, to your paper. We really appreciate
thank
that.
You.
And it's always well written, which is much appreciated.
Thank you.
So thank you, and yes, we certainly can keep you in the loop. Councillor Miller.
Yeah. In part of what Damien said, Damien put in an article that I've written not as a councillor, but as a public person about greyhounds. I put the same article in the digest and they came back to me and said it was too political.
Well, that's so sort of not relevant to this.
No, but I'm just letting you know that I wasn't happy with that, but I was pleased to say that Damien put it in for me and we got a very good reply on it.
That is good.
So thank you, Damien, for that.
If I could just comment, the digest obviously has some specific limitations to what it feels comfortable doing, and that's absolutely fine for them. They make their own decisions and their policies, and I'm perhaps slightly cheeky, might not be the right word, but I'm a bit broader in what I will publish. So anyway, delighted to work with anybody who wants to.
Thank you, Councillor Archer. Good morning.
Good morning, excuse me.
All righty. So we'll go on to 7 is petitions, deputations, presentations. Petitions, nil. Deputations. We do have Howard Hanson at 9:45, Dr. Andrew Cole at 11. And Jen Butler's going to be talking with us at lunchtime, just give councillors an opportunity to have a chat. So we've got those deputations to happen.
Excuse me, Madam Mayor.
Yes.
I understand that Minister Jen Butler is cancelled. Is that true?
I've never heard anything.
I have.
Have you, Katrina? No, I can check my emails now. I haven't heard it. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, you might be privy to something we're not. Alrighty. So yes, they're the deputations. Presentations, nil. Notice of motion. The purpose under Regulation 16 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation 2015 relating to motions on notice, it states the following. A councillor may give to the general manager at least 7 days before a meeting, give written notice of a motion together with supporting information and reasons to be included on the agenda of that meeting. 8.1, there is a recommendation. That's been withdrawn. Councillor Miller's withdrawn. All right. 8.2 is a notice of a motion from Councillor Hall. So, someone to move that? It's moved by Councillor Hall. You second Councillor Miller?
Yeah.
Councillor Hall, would you like to speak to this?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I was informed by a ratepayer about 2 weeks ago that the Connect bus that goes to Bothwell, also that goes to Hamilton News, was weekly. Now it's fortnightly. The ratepayer was very upset due to the fact is that she used the Connect bus weekly for her appointments, also some shopping. She was also in a bit of disarray because her family works and she thought that she's a burden on her family for, you know, for organising the trip, the fortnightly trip. And, you know, like, we don't need this stress in our community. I feel as if we are slowly being dissolved into our services of no more being there. And this is a service that our community needs. Yeah, that's all I can say.
So I'd just like to fill you in on a bit of an update for that. The General Manager, Acting GM, Steve, and I have been speaking with this. I've also spoken with Kerry Vincent, I'm waiting on a second reply from him about this. He's waiting on information himself about it, and I know that Damien covered part of that as well for us, and we'll continue to work with this. And yes, I agree, the essential services are fading in the Central Highlands drastically, and we need to continue to lobby the ministers especially. So it's sort of ongoing at the moment, if I may say.
Yep.
And we'll keep you informed. Councillor Cassidy, you had your hand up.
I totally agree with Councillor Hall, because it's very important with our elderly people. I mean, I know that from Ooze they go in once a week through the Central Highland Health Clinic. They go in, they've got a small bus. But yeah, I agree, we need to get on top of this before it happens.
It's happened.
Well, we need to push back, don't we?
Well, as I just said, we are pushing. Councillor Cassidy.
So, all I have to do is look at history, and I feel it's an effort by the Liberal government to continue to isolate our communities. If councillors who have been around longer than me would recall, I think it was back in 2017, 16, we fought for 2 years to save our bus service that ran from Bothwell. It ran for 75 years. Now, on a personal note, my wife used to take it to university. And they, you know, we fought tooth and nail. We had community consultation, petitions. The Department of State Growth sent out a survey, but nobody had seen the survey until I went to go collect it. It's just, you know, I feel very pissed off, I guess would be a good term. I can't think of any better way to express myself. With the Department of State Growth cutting off our service, you look at island communities around the world, Hong Kong, Macau, as an example. In the Philippines, they have buses going to the most remote villages. I know there's a heck of a lot more people in those places than Tasmania, but I don't think that's the point. If we want to get vehicles off the road, we want to reduce air pollution, we want to meet some climate change targets, well, they need to increase public transportation, not reduce it.
That's right. We need to keep pushing and pushing. Councillor, all right.
So, if this motion gets up, that's fine. I think the usage would be a key determinant again. See, if, for example, this lady was the only person who used it once a week. Yeah, like, there's got to be some sort of recognition of the fact that someone's got to pay. And that's obviously probably what it is. But anyway, if this motion gets up, Steve will find out what the usage is, and maybe we ought to promote it more, something like that.
Alrighty, Councillor Honor, then Archer.
No one from that group approach the independent living units in Bothwell. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 there who knew nothing about it.
Okay.
I know one doesn't drive at all.
No.
They knew nothing about the service?
The service, okay. Yes.
Okay.
So they're not promoting it.
So maybe it's up to us to promote it.
In fact,
that's a good point.
The driver didn't find out until he got to work on that day that he would only be running once a fortnight.
Oh, okay. Councillor Archer.
A couple of things. I'd like to endorse what has been proposed in the motion, but in addition to that, you know, we did have very good services in the past, as far as I understand, as Burn Bridge, which isn't the case anymore. But I understand there are school buses running every day from Bothwell to Hobart. My partner's got a working children's certificate, attempted to get permission to travel on the bus, can't do it. Yeah. So can I suggest we explore further the use of the school bus service that runs every day, twice a day, for public use? It's not never full. I'm sure most people would be happy to get a working with children certificate to be able to travel on. But again, it would be an alternative way for people in need to be able to travel backwards and forwards to Hobart. I remember when we had our community consultation days, one of the major issues was raised by a lot of single ladies in the town was that they did not have ongoing access to good transport backwards and forwards to Hobart. They were the growth area in the Bothwell Township. They were, you know, most of the new people coming in were single ladies, and so I think we need to offer them whatever support we can, and perhaps coordinating it with, and I know we'll have some fun, the education department is really a logical compromise.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So what are you saying about this recommendation?
Well, I'm saying that in addition to this, we need to be looking at, seeing it's not another alternative to supply the same service, but this bus is running every day anyway. It's not very hard to put another 6 or 8 people on it some days and 2 people the others. Mm. It's already, the service is already provided for children. It's just absolute craziness not to allow, Hobart kids catch public transport to school every day. There are people who don't have this qualification and yet they can catch a bus, which is crazy. It's just bureaucracy gone mad.
Mm.
So I'd like to see that coordinators in discussion that Stephen has on our behalf.
Alrighty.
Does the mover and second have any concern if we put a dot point at, C?
We could put a dot point. That would be Councillor Hall and Miller. Is that
I think in the motion we've got down the bottom there that Stephen does explore further.
This point C is clearly about school bus.
So
we'd have to have a point C.
We should agree with that, John. Point B is to buy an additional day off the
bus.
I'd
be extremely
happy with that. I can't see any reason why not.
So we've got a point C, and that would be
the school bus service and usage by the public.
To be better utilised.
Absolutely. Everyone wins.
Yes.
Right, okay, we've got a point C. Councillor Honor, you had your hand up.
That the school bus services, like the all school bus services, are nothing to do with the education department. It is all under state growth.
Right.
Now, so they're the ones that we've got to go through.
So we've got 2 ministers to speak to, or the same minister?
Excuse me.
Sorry.
Yeah, so just clarifying that it's not education department.
Right, Councillor Cassidy.
Have you already spoken, Councillor Cassidy?
Oh, has he? Okay, yes he has. Alrighty, so we'll go back to the mover, who was Councillor Hall.
Thank you, Mayor.
To close.
What her argument was is that the bus leaves on a Friday, and in most of her appointments, I can't just put a doctor out to get myself into an appointment. It's got to be flexible enough so that I can meet the doctor's arrangements. She said it's so hard trying to get a doctor on Friday, and if it was flexible, there'd be more people that probably would use the service that's already in place. Friday makes it very restricted.
Alrighty, well thank you for that, and this is ongoing as I said, and I work with the acting GM on this as well. So those in favour of the recommendation, please raise your hands. And don't forget there's a C now, A, B and C. Please raise your hands. Okay, that is carried.
I'm going to remove myself for 8.3.
Right. 8.3. I've got Councillor Hall in there.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mommy. Did you do the CWA?
Okay.
I've got a double gig today, ma'am.
Oh, you are important. Very good. And for your knowledge, I am a member of CWA, but that's irrelevant, I believe, but I'd like you to know that as well. Councillor Hall has a recommendation. He has moved. Could I have a seconder? Councillor, all right. Councillor Hall, would you like to speak?
The CWA and Lions Club, their storage facilities have gone beyond repairable. And they can't do anything with it. I think the shed's got to be removed, but they was wondering if the council would waive the development application fee to put the shipping container on.
Right. Councillor, all right, you're the second.
So, Lions Club and CWA, that should be Lions Club and CWA, not even CWA. Lions Club and CWA are Bothell, they do a good job. We should support those sorts of things. We do wave development applications for a whole range of community groups.
We do. And the other thing is the container needs to be placed it's not stuck out on the...
There's rules around it all, so that'll go to the
location.
We'll deal with that.
So the location's important. Councillor Cassidy.
Yes, I just wanted to add that the Lions Club and CWA, they've provided a lot of support to this council.
Oh, yes.
So I think it's one good way that we can reciprocate.
Yeah.
And where would we get fed at Bothell otherwise?
So what you're worried about. Okay, so closing Councillor Hall.
I think that they want to work closely with the council. A team to put it in a place where it wasn't visual from the road. So I think it was.
Is that the LCWA building owned by the church anyway?
Yes.
All right. So that's been closed now. The recommendation. Please raise your hand in favour, and that is carried. Thank you. Somebody invite Councillor Miller in. Thank you, Councillor Archer.
Madam Mayor, if I may, Jen Butler is in Parliament today.
That was the reason. That's good then. All good. 8.4 is a notice of a motion by Councillor Cassidy. Did you want to
defer that to your,
defer? I thought that might be the best. Yeah.
Was it to move? We need to move it to another place to bring it back.
To move the agenda, I would need a mover. So Councillor Hall is moving the agenda.
What are we doing?
Moving the agenda.
8.4 is deferred until after the professor speaks. Is that what you're after?
That's what we're after. Oh, I'll second it. And Councillor Miller has second. Those in favour of moving the agenda, please raise your hand. Okay, that is carried, so the agenda is moved.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any time.
Nine is Council acting as a planning authority. There's nothing there to address. That's nil. 10 is the ordinary meeting. That's irrelevant as well. 11 is the monthly mayoral and elected members' activities. Mover, please, Councillor Hall. Seconder, please. Seconder, please. Councillor Cassidy. Councillor Hall, any comments?
Yes, Mayor. Can I ask the Acting General Manager a question?
I guess
because I would like to...
Probably no.
his, I'd like to utilise his knowledge. I'm confused, Acting General Manager.
Here's an admission.
Now, I'm confused our councillor has got hats. I need a hard hat. So we'll use this as an example, as myself. So I'll go back to the Watermana Bridge when I, as a ratepayer, asked Jen Butler to come to the bridge. My question is to the Acting General Manager is, could I have done that as a councillor and not had to go through the protocol of council? Due to the fact this wasn't a council, this is not a council, this is not a Central Islands Council, it was... Can I use my John Hall at Central Islands Councillor email to get in touch with Jen Butler and...
You'd been asked this question in regards to, by ratepayer, to do this?
No, for myself. My own, well, for my own knowledge.
Okay.
So I don't get in trouble around the table.
Okay. You raised this with councillors before you did that? You informed councillors that you were attending a meeting at Watermana Bridge?
You yes. Invited councillors.
Yeah.
You actually invited
and councillors were invited?
Yes, but I done that as pretty much a ratepayer, you know, because I didn't want to...
That's fine. That's fine.
So I could have done that as Councillor John Hall.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have, I wouldn't have had to go through the protocols and I could have used it on my... I could have used it as a...
It was council business.
As a commitment as well.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
All right, Councillor Cassidy is the seconder.
I just think it would be a matter of courtesy just to swing it by the general manager and the mayor. You know, I don't think that it needs to come to council for a vote necessarily, does it?
It wasn't coming to council to vote. I think it was dealt with at a workshop. Yeah. It was a council meeting.
Yeah, but it was just a question that, you know...
It is as a courtesy to inform.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's always required.
All right, Councillor, all right.
So I think what Councillor Hall was talking about is he got dragged over the coals for doing that. But we have Councillor Cassidy with a meeting with two ministers and...
Well,
nothing. One was the...
Lobbying.
Badger and the...
Oh, we're not ministers, so yeah. Members of Parliament. Yeah. And but Council Hall got dragged over the coals for doing that in public. And it appears to be okay now.
Well,
yeah.
I don't think Steve was here.
No,
yeah.
Steve was.
Yeah, no, I was.
Yes, Steve was. Yeah, no.
I
can remember the date.
I can't slip out from under that.
Yeah.
But the thing being is that quite clearly council was informed that was happening. So I don't have a problem with it.
So
it's in relation to bettering, you know, things.
I understand that. That would have been because councillors should talk to politicians all the time. But Councillor Cassidy seems to have just turned up with Rebecca White. We didn't get invited.
Yeah, look, quite clearly...
She invited me, actually.
No. That's correct.
Jesus Christ.
That's correct. She rang...
You've got nothing to do. Apparently, Rebecca White rang Councillor Cassidy. It was nothing organised as council...
And sent me a text.
...at all. And there is, if you read the roles and functions of the councillors, and there is parts of the Act that you can refer to of your role as a councillor. Without any further ado, I will go back to any other councillors.
Can I close on that?
I'm just checking. Any other councillors? All right, you can close, Councillor Hall.
Can I reinstate that on my commitments, that Watermana Bridge meeting with Jen Butler?
Yep.
Yep, done. All right.
What are you doing?
So Councillor Hall's closed. Those in favour of the recommendation, please raise your hands. Those in favour? Yes? Okay, carry on. Um, 11.1, mayoral commitments. It's been pretty busy for me, Council, as usual. I've been working with the consultancy with the GM recruitment agency quite constantly.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, he's been in touch very regularly.
Including us in his conversation?
No, he hasn't, but it was basically questions to help him with different issues he wanted clarification for. And working with the acting GM, Stephen, on many issues, we've covered a lot, I believe, and I am very happy with the way things are working there. Been speaking with Kerry Vincent, as I mentioned, the reduction of the Area Connect services. Joe Palmer, waiting on her reply. What else? Oh, I found it very interesting at the conference in Devonport, the Mayor's Workshop, with Dr. Lisa Denny with Legat. She gave an informative presentation to mayors on Tasmania's population and the current reality, and understanding, you know, the current and projected population dynamics for informed decision making. And I'm going to put a little bit in the mayor's column when I write it down. I haven't got it done yet, but it's very interesting to see what's happening within the actual Central Highlands area itself. So that's about it there. 12 is operational matters. 12.1 is health and wellbeing. A mover, please. Councillor Honour and Councillor Miller. Councillor Honour, any comments?
No.
Councillor Miller?
Yeah, in the childcare project brothel, it's a community meeting regarding future options, including the church. I have been made aware that...
Good morning.
I have been made aware that a lot of research has been put into using the church as a childcare, and the people involved have put a lot of research and gone to... the appropriate authorities. So just to let people know that a lot of work has been done for the church to become a childcare centre. So.
And there's still work going on between the acting GM and myself with meetings with what's his name?
But it's good to see that
James Anthony.
That's him. Yeah. Okay, councillors.
Can I speak?
Yes, yeah. Councillor.
I tapped onto what Councillor Miller had said, but this is a question. Is the school's got a house in Bothwell at the top end of the town that they very rarely use? It's got a fence around it. I know it's the education department. I understand that, but would that make a very good childcare facility instead of trying to? It's got a toilet, it's got a fence, where the church is, you have to fence it, you have to put a toilet. I've said all I wanted to say. It's only a thought.
Mm. Yeah. I can't let you have a second bite of the cherry. Okay, because of the councillors, Councillor Cassidy.
Well, I think probably the biggest issue that we have, the childcare is attracting personnel who want qualified personnel and so forth. There are plenty of facilities around Ooze and Bothwell, and there has been a childcare facility in Bothwell that ran previously for quite some time, but it's the personnel that, you know, we still need to attract them somehow.
Definitely, Councillor Archer.
May the acting GM fill us in on where the discussion has gotten to?
Yeah, look, we've had several discussions in regards to what we've had. And ones that may be interested in providing a service, and I say may. We've also looked at, you know, the options of the education department and using some of the buildings that currently exist. There's real grey areas around trying to use a facility on the school site, and that's the education department in regards to the fact that they're glued on to it's got to be used for a specific purpose, and outsiders using it is pretty difficult.
If I could just interrupt, I know that they pulled that sort of stuff when the pool was built, and we still managed to build it.
Yeah, I've got a rough idea what happened with the pool. But quite clearly, we will look at all options there are, and that doesn't preclude talking to the education department. But where it's got to at this point in time, it seems that it may be easier to actually utilise, you know, St Michael's and All Angels Church.
But only a part,
yes.
So you know, preclude the rest of the building being used for still religious
not purposes. At this point in time, no.
Yeah.
With what we're dealing with at the moment, no.
That's an important clarification in terms of support for the church itself.
Plus there needs to be community involvement and community consultations as well. So, okay, so I go back to Councillor Honour to close.
I have sent an email to you and to from Henry from the diocese with attachments on what the process is from now. That only comes through to me 10 o'clock last night.
Okay.
So I have forwarded that on to both of you.
Right.
Hamilton 200. What's... Councillor's invited or what?
Do you want to speak to that, Kat?
Yeah.
Kat's our community development officer.
It's not... Nadine's leading the project. I'm just supporting some of the organisation, but I was actually thinking of that heading into today, wondering if you had all been sent an invite. So no. Make sure you get sent around an invite today. So the date's changed a couple of times. This is the initial meeting that's going to be had and is the start, I guess, of many opportunities for engagement, but I wasn't, because Nadine's been handling a lot of the background work, I wasn't aware if you'd received direct invites, but I'll make sure you do. I'll do that today.
Thank you. So Councillor Honour has closed. I'll put the recommendation. Those in favour of the recommendation, please raise your hands. That's carried. Thank you. Point 2 is the community grant support for Gretna Volunteer Fire Brigade. Councillor Cassidy moved it. Councillor Hall second. Councillor Cassidy, would you like to speak as a mover?
I don't have anything to say. I think it's a good thing. I think we should give them that.
Rightio, Councillor Hall as a seconder.
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to say something. I think this fire brigade does a wonderful job. It raises money at the Bushy Park Showgrounds. It helps with the ANZAC service at Gretna. They seem to be very community orientated with the community. So, I mean, I am for this.
Yeah. Councillor Miller.
Talking to, is it Colin?
Colin.
From the Gretna Volunteer Fire Brigade. I was talking to him at ANZAC, the last ANZAC meeting, and I was actually quite surprised at the attention that the adults had with the juniors as far as teaching them not only firefighting but other aspects of that they need in life. So definitely, I mean, they put a lot of time and effort into these juniors, and I reckon that we should be giving them this.
Okay. And yes, I agree. The Gretna Fire Brigade is brilliant. And Colin Cunningham puts so much work into it. All righty, any other councillors?
it's outside our normal grants, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't support it.
No, no, not at all. Alrighty, Councillor Cassidy, would you like to close?
I think John was fairly eloquent, which is unusual.
Would you like to close then, Councillor Cassidy?
That's it.
Okay, those in favour of the recommendation, please raise your hands. Carried.
Can I just interrupt me? I've just got a text. Did you get it?
From?
Oh, Howard.
They're just running.
He went to Bothwell for some reason. He's going to be quarter an hour late.
Okay, so he'll be a tad late. Thank you.
He'll be quarter an hour late.
That's okay.
We would do that.
Come on, we can't do
that. Yeah, we'll do that, Carol. We're not looking at anybody, are we?
Several times.
Okay, 12.3, Sports Representation Grant. A mover, please. Councillor Honour. A seconder? Seconder? No seconder, then that lapses. Okay. 12.4, Community Grant, Bothwell Cricket, Councillor Miller. Seconder, Councillor Hall. Councillor Miller, would you like to speak to this?
I need to say that again. This cricket club tends to put a lot of time and effort as the adults into the children and making sure that they are well equipped. And it's just so nice to see that. And I mean, if there are 30 children going, well, it shows that the children are happy with it. So I agree that we should allocate the 980.
Yeah, no, very good. Councillor Hall, you have comments?
It's a very good, worthy cause. Now, I just want to ask a question. So underneath these grants here, there says there's currently $13,000 remaining in the community grants. We go down to the second one. There is currently $10,000 left in the community grants. And then there's on the bottom one, it says there is currently $13,000 in the community grant. Wouldn't you think it'd be depreciating as it goes down the column?
It depends on whether we approve it or not, doesn't it?
But, I mean,
which way they present it to you here.
Kate wants to add something for you, Councillor.
Well, if we just look at the wording of that, I think they're actually different pools.
Yeah.
So you've got community grants, the next one. So with the sports representation...
Oh, yeah, so it's a different grant approach.
I'm sorry, I'm not...
Can we let Kat finish, please?
It comes out of the, a slightly different bucket, and it's not the community grant. So that's why they're different amounts. It's a different budget. So hopefully I got the maths right.
I wasn't picking on your Kat.
Alrighty. Councillors, any comments?
Yeah.
Rightio.
So back to Councillor Miller to close.
No, I've said all I wanted to say. Let's just...
Okay, so I'll put the recommendation up. Those four, please raise your hands. Okay, that is carried. Very good. 13, operational matters. 13.1. Yeah, thanks, Katrina. Okay, just a slight typo there. It should be Works and Services report for August, not July. Councillor Cassidy.
It says August.
It says August there.
It does not.
Yeah.
Within the motion. Okay.
Oh, in the July. Sorry.
Okay, who was the seconder?
Oh, well, we've already done the July one.
Did we get a seconder?
Who is the
mover? I'll second.
Okay, the mover was Councillor Cassidy. As the mover, Councillor Cassidy.
Yes, Stephen, perhaps for the convey to Jason. We're doing some work, I noticed, on the Hollow Tree Road, but I don't know how far it's going to progress or where. But if you look at the bridge there outside of Rathmore, between that and Hollow Tree, the stone mansion there, there's a pretty big potholes there right before the bridge. So
they've got a truck. They got a truckload of cold mix today. So we're filling in tonight.
We're calling tenders in the not too distant future for the section of, from the bridge heading up to Bothwell.
Yeah, it's the worst but, I've seen the road.
Yeah, that section will be done. I had a discussion with Jason the other day because I think we've got some real drainage issues in that section. Part of our problem is to get a drain deep enough on the other side is going to cause a problem. So, but yeah, that's right. That's the section we're going to be...
If I may want to also continue, you know that the long patch down there on Highland Lakes Road that we've complained about for years, and they fixed last February or March. Well, it's starting to cave in again. And
is
get
it?
Ripply, yeah.
Well, probably at the speed you travel at, you'd probably be able to go over the top of it without touching
So, where is that part of road that's down the den we're talking about, Councillor?
Yeah. Yep.
How many times have they patched that?
I've forgot to count.
Yeah, look. Hopefully at the next meeting, Elspeth will be at council meeting so we can discuss these issues with them.
Okay. Councillor Miller's the seconder.
I want to thank Jason and acting general manager Steve. I rang him concerning a culvert along here in Tarleton Street. It was completely blocked. Within that day, within a couple of hours, Jason had rung me and said he'd cleaned it out and made it on both sides. So I want to thank him for that. I noticed it wasn't in this report, but yeah, he did it, and thank him for doing that because that could have caused a lot of problems with this rain.
And also, I think we should commend the workers that have put the entrance to the Gretna War Memorial. It looks very good, very neat.
It looks lovely.
So well done. If Jason could thank his workers that actually did that work, that'd be good. Councillors, any other? Councillor Hall?
I'm just going off the rails a bit, Mayor. With the slip there on the den, I really think is we should... Kerry Vincent, when he came and seen us last time, he said he was really wanting to come back and see us again. I think he probably should be invited.
Well, we've invited a cabinet meeting to come up, but we haven't got any response yet, have we?
Kerry will do at the moment.
You reckon one?
One will do at the moment. Anybody will do at the moment.
So we'll be pushing for this cabinet meeting, see what happens.
Then. Make sure he goes that way, though. Den Hill Road.
All right. Any other councillors?
No.
All right, back.
Getting old wood truck broken down just there, right?
All right, Councillor. Go back to the mover to close, Councillor Cassidy.
Oh, yeah. So I'm just grumbling about that. Stretch of road before it gets any worse because I know it's 100 kilometers per hour up there, but it's best to travel out at 80 kilometers per hour right now, but in the past I've had to take it at 40 kilometers per hour because it was so rough. Also, I wanted to point out we constantly talked about safety issues of the Highland Lakes Road and about 9:02 the other night when I spoke. There was one hell of an accident on that Highland Lakes Road.
Was it?
And a lot of SES and fire brigade and two ambulances, more flashing lights than I've seen in a long time. So we need to do something about the Highland Lakes Road, especially
if we
start bringing up heavy vehicles for the wind farm.
Yeah. All right. That won't be ignored, that's for sure, Councillor. Okay, I'll put the recommendation forward. Those in favour of the recommendation, raise your hands. Thank you. That is carried. Operational. 14.1 is the monthly finance report. May I have a mover, please? Councillor Honour, Councillor Ora.
Yeah, in regard to the previous motion, operational matters, Can I ask Stephen a question in regard to that?
Yes, you can.
Stephen, we've had hassles in the past with lack of keeping track of individual staff expenditure. And there was systems put in place under the previous GM to ensure that we didn't have dishonesty occur again. I imagine that's continued on your watch and perhaps enhanced. Can you give us some advice as to what systems are in place now to make sure we don't have a repeat of that unfortunate?
Well, quite clearly what we do now is before we do any jobs we get quotes, and we get several quotes, not just one. And predominantly anything that's out of kilter to what we've got budget-wise, you know, we have a look at it to see why. And quite clearly with Jason and Barry, if they're going to do any jobs, they communicate with me before they do them if they look as though they're going to run over.
But in terms of things like access to, you know, the council credit card, this sort of stuff...
Well, I sign off to those.
Right.
So, yeah, and if I don't have the details in regards to those, it won't sign off to them.
Right, thank you. And that wasn't the case previously. I don't understand how what happened. So I'm just wondering what systems we do have now to prevent another sad circumstance like that happening again.
There's plenty of systems in place.
Right.
And quite clearly, everyone's fully aware of what's occurred in the past, and they're fully aware of what the procedures and processes are now.
Yes, definitely. All righty, that answers your question, Councillor.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, so we're back into board at 14.1. Moved by Councillor Honour, second by Councillor. All right. Councillor Honour is a mover. Did you have a comment?
No, it's all very straightforward. Very well.
Yeah. Councillor, all right.
So there's $500,000 missing.
You were just talking about fraud, and then you come up with
Total amount of money in the bank, $5 million, but it's all split up in a couple of other spots to $5.5 million.
Okay. Do we need someone to answer that?
There's be enough there to have a council meeting in the Bahamas, I reckon.
Okay.
But I don't think there's many takers.
Let's just go to Hamilton Island.
So, yeah. Can you see where I'm? Where I am, Steve?
Yeah.
5026 whatever, blah blah. Yeah. Page 20 something, 26, and then it's split up 5.5 in a couple of spots. Hey. Yeah.
What was that, Katrina?
No, I was just checking if the decision wasn't today.
Yeah, look, what I'll do is I'll give you full detail.
Yeah.
I don't see that there's...
No, I don't think someone's run away.
I'm
convinced that's not the case.
Yeah, no, there's some timing in regards to grants that could be part of it.
Might be, yeah.
Because I know that our financial assistance grants, we only got 50%, not 75%.
But they should still be in a banking account somewhere.
The money we received,
correct. So they're more likely just a typo in that.
So I've got Councillor Cassidy Miller and after waiting, Councillor Cassidy.
I guess may I suggest that when you have questions on the financial report, you contact the acting general manager.
Correct.
And mayor, and perhaps you might ask them to invite Zishan to explain or attend the council meeting to inform all councillors. I think that would be the prudent thing to do.
I think it's beneficial to have a session here at the meeting. Yeah. Councillor Miller?
I'm looking at the rates reconciliation, and they've got penalties raised. Now, the penalties, is that would be penalties raised on
late rates, I imagine.
Well, I admit my last month rates were late, but it doesn't show here.
How do you know?
Because it's not on there. My last rate, I forgot to pay on time, and I ended up paying a penalty.
So we wouldn't put your name in there?
No, but there's nothing there, nothing showing.
So when did you finally pay them?
About a week later. A week too late.
Was it last financial year or this financial year?
Mm.
So is it this year's rates that you...
Yeah, in August. The August rates. No, I just wondered, because if it's... If mine... If I mean, I was late paying mine. I thought I'd pay it and I didn't.
Okay, let's not...
But no, I just...
personal rates.
No, I just wanted to know if... I mean, if mine's not... Why doesn't mine show, and is there anybody else's? That's all.
Okay.
Because obviously you...
Again, that's a question that should have been asked.
Yes. But I didn't see it until now.
Okay, Councillor Archer.
So yeah, I'm just feeling David Meacham's hat. You know, I'm feeling very much his loss at the moment. He often asks questions about the grants in terms of where that's all heading. Where do we end up with the Central Islands being reclassified in terms of our share of the pie, Steve? Has that been formalised?
In other words, you're saying service population as opposed to...
That's right.
...actual population. Yeah, it has been included in the grants. Has been for the last 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, I thought the scale was actually going to increase. Am I incorrect in that? So it's not just a year, like annually. Yeah.
It was over a 5-year period, I thought.
Yes, slowly ramping up.
Yeah.
And as that's been reflected in the figures already.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for clarification.
Any other councillors? All right, over to you, Councillor Honour, to close.
Yeah, no, I've got nothing else to say.
Thank you. Those in favour of the recommendation, please raise your hands. Raise your hands, please. Yes, carried. Rightio, 14.2 is the common seal. Well, that's pretty straightforward. A mover, please, Councillor Honour. Seconder, Councillor Miller. Any comments, Councillor Honour?
No, very straightforward.
Councillor Miller?
No. It would be good if you want to speak to something, you can have a recommendment from us.
Councillor Laws, any comments?
Excuse me.
Excuse me, councillors, any comments?
Did you want something?
No.
Okay, those in favour of the recommendation, please raise your hands. Carried. Thank you. Fifteen is the operational matters. 15.1, do and catchment mover, please. Councillor Hall, second to Councillor Allwright. Councillor Hall, any comments?
No, Mayor.
Councillor Allwright is the second.
Do and catchment got their AGM on Friday up at Hamilton, up at
Coringa.
Slight constitutional change, but no, they've done a good job and they've got a good couple of good buckets of money to keep them going for a while.
Yeah, they do a brilliant job, actually.
I just sort of expected they might have started on the Clyde by now, but there must be some hold up somewhere.
Councillors, any comments? Alrighty, back to Councillor Hall to close.
I think is they're still doing consultation. They're trying to iron that bit of the pie out, I think, but I've been told.
So it's not
a conversation, you're closing Councillor Hall, right?
Yeah.
I beg your pardon then?
You're closing?
Yes, I'm just...
Sorry, yeah.
That's okay.
Okay, those in favour of the recommendation, please raise your hands. Carried. 16, operational matters, 16.1, development and environmental services. Mover, please, Councillor Cassidy. Seconder, Councillor Miller. Councillor Cassidy as the mover, comments?
Yes, Mayor Astro, Acting General Manager of Policy and Operational Matter. Is there any progress on replacing retired DES manager?
It's still going through the process at this point in time. Hopefully at the next workshop I'll be able to give a dissertation as to how it's likely to go.
Thank you very much. No other questions.
Thank you. Councillor Miller, you're the seconder. Do you have any questions?
Can I just ask a question? The DA number 2025-34, it says plans to build a freestanding deck A freestanding deck would be not attached to anything.
Correct.
Not really knowing much about the planning permit, what is it got to be a certain size for it to have a planning permit? Is that what I'm going? The freestanding deck.
Look, I'd have to take it up with the loser.
This should have been to the planner.
Yeah, no, that's all right. It's just caught my being freestanding. Whether it was attached to a house or whether it was.
No, that's something for the planner to give you
the
answer to that.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Any other questions, councillors? All right, back to the mover to close, Councillor Cassidy.
Nothing further to add.
All righty. Those in favour of the recommendation, please raise your hands. Okie dokie, that is carried. 17 is operational matter, 17.1, council committees and reps. Hello, welcome.
Come on, Lisa.
Come in.
Hi, who's we got? I'm Howard.
Nice to meet you, Howard.
Jamie, nice to meet you. And my son, Quentin.
Quentin.
And
how are you?
And Jake Norris, our CEO.
Nice to meet you.
Welcome.
Sorry we're late. Jim had put in the text that it was here, which I had read.
So we
had a very nice coffee.
GPS. Mucked up, did it?
No, it wasn't even the GPS. I hadn't even read this.
So can I have a mover to go back to the agenda number, please? Councillor Hall move. And seconder, Councillor Cassidy, to go back to item... Katrina.
Which agenda?
16.1
Alrighty, so welcome, Howard. And would you like to speak to the council?
I would love to do that. And I've got a quick presentation, so we can probably plug my computer into one of them.
Fairly small chambers, this one, so it's not a
might just do it without waiting in there at the minute because it's going to have a that's not coming off my computer.
Thank you.
Doki, let's go over to Howard for the presentation.
I'm hoping that's going to come up.
It should.
Okay, well, while that's coming, thank you very much for the opportunity to come and introduce ourselves. It's very refreshing, Mayor. The phone call from Jim and to be approached to come and present to you guys what we're up to, and we feel so thoroughly welcome in this community. The efforts that some of our neighbours have gone to assist us and make us welcome, we can't believe how lucky we've been to land here. So I've actually got two, depending on how much time we've got this morning, and I did say to Jim, and now it's not actually wet outside, we probably should have been going for for a bit of a drive and get an eyeful rather than an earful. But we're available if anyone's interested to come and have a look at any time. My son Quentin, that we introduced before, Q's running the operation up here. This is his first year working in our business. He left school 3 years ago. He's had 2 years working on the mainland and cereal cropping places.
Okay.
He loves using diesel, and so we were going to use enough of it this year to attract him to come and help us for the year. So he's been doing an absolutely outstanding job and building a terrific team of people around him up there. And what we've achieved in 6 months, we're very, very happy with. Trees are now going in the ground. Doug, do you know how we make that bigger? Depending on time, I've actually got two presentations. So the quick one's just about the Upper Howley project and what we've been up to up here. Perfect, thank you. My father, Carl, still comes to work most days, although we've given him a couple of heart operations in the last few weeks, so we're giving him a little bit of a reprieve at the moment. This photo was taken when we'd just finished building the dam at Powley with Q and Dad and I there. Effectively, this is the plan of what we're planning on doing. But what's attractive to us about this area is two things. One is the elevation, and also the access to water. So there's a limited range of sites in Tasmania that are suitable for what we want to do, that have got access to water from the Derwent and the elevation range. So really, today, we only really pick cherries for about 50 days. Our traditional season in Kewin doesn't start until the early days of January, and we normally pick until about the 14th or 15th of February. But our vision over the next 10 years is we want to go from having a 50-day cherry season to having a 100-day cherry season. And we want to be able to give our customers the ability to have our brand on the shelf for a longer period of time. But, of course, that also improves our economies of scale. We've, over the last 3 or 4 years, we've built it.
Can I just butt in, Mayor? Can I move that we suspend meeting procedures if councillors want to ask
Can we let Howard have his presentation first?
Well, I'm more than happy for questions at any stage.
Okay. Yeah, well, we've got to suspend meeting procedures.
What we're planning this year is between about 280 and 340 metres. So at the highest stuff we've got planted at Rose Garden is about 120. And so the plan at the moment is we'll actually finish completely picking at Rose Garden. And there's no exact science in it. And the Americans always talk about 3 days delay in maturity for every 100 feet of elevation, but that's in a bit warmer climate than what we've got here and a different range of varieties. But we think we'll finish the latest fruit at Rose Garden, and then we start again up here. So what you can see on the left-hand side, the green variety that's there, some of you that have had some exposure to the cherry industry may recognise some of the variety names. So the green ones a variety called Sweet Georgia. So that's a sort of a mid-season variety. Ordinarily, we'd probably start that at Rose Garland on about the 10th or 15th of January, and we think up here we'll start that one about a month later.
Pretty significant, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty significant. And then the next variety, the one that's in the pink, that's a variety Regina, which is a traditional variety, very, very, very tolerant of rain, high pack-out cherry, and it's really just to fill the gap, because the ones that are in orange and the ones that are in blue, they are a range of new genetics that we've purchased out of a breeder in Germany. Mm-hmm. And he's been focused on trying to breed, like the whole world has got cherries for the main part of the season. Mm-hmm. His focus has been on trying to breed ones later than the conventional season and earlier than the conventional season. So we really got to become friendly with him and secure the genetics because of the late stuff. But now we're exposed to what he's up to. We're just as excited about his early cherries. And so we're also, as soon as we get this project finished, we're also looking for land closer to sea level that's earlier to use genetics from the same program. And we think those genetics will start picking on the 1st of December. So we're basically planning on adding nearly a month of season on the start of the season and a month of season on the end of the season.
And that early December picking, how does that compare to the mainland?
We export a lot of mainland cherries as well, so we're the largest exporter of cherries out of the country. We normally do about 35 to 40% of the value of all cherry exports leaving Australia. But in the early part of the year, we're sourcing them from warm areas like Hilston in New South Wales and northern South Australia in the Riverland. And then we come to places like Young, to Shepparton, to Wangaratta and to the Adelaide Hills. And that sort of fills the gap until we start out at Tasmania. Mm. And for most of my career, we don't want to compete with the mainland, but I've now come to the opinion that the product that we're producing is so much different to what the mainland's producing and fits into a different category in the market, that there's going to be demand for our product whenever we've got it. And it's really interesting selling mainland cherries now all the way through December and into the early part of January. But literally, the day we've got Tasmanian ones available, they'll pay twice as much for them. Right. And that's partly because of our brand, and we've been doing it for 30 years, and they trust the brand. And I reckon the best way of explaining it, I always explain it a bit like wine. And, you know, we all know, you can go along to Dan Murphy's now, and you can buy a $15 bottle of wine. But you can also go along to Dan Murphy's and buy a $150 bottle of wine. And if you want to look hard enough, you'll find a $1,500 bottle of wine there. And so our biggest competitor with cherries has always been Chile, and Chile's labour cost advantage is massive compared to ours. So what they have to pay for a day is what we have to pay for an hour. So we can't afford to compete with them head to head, because we're not going to be competitive. In the same way, we can't make cars in Australia or build televisions or etc. etc. We couldn't compete with them, but our product is in a different part of the market. And we first introduced a gold box for cherries about 25 years ago, and we didn't appreciate it at the time. We just thought it was a good idea that Asians like gold and red, and so we did a gold and red box. But of course, you know, what that did was it put us in the part of the market like that $1,500 bottle of wine. And back then, everything we were growing in the Huon and the Derwent Valleys was all being grown outside. It was before we had rain covers, and you know, the biggest risk of rain, the biggest risk to cherries is rain. And so on average, we're always losing probably about 40% each year. But the only way we could guarantee you could get that 40% out is we actually paid people to do something we called positive selection. And we picked up every single cherry one at a time, and we looked at it, and if it was perfect, we passed it over a belt, and no one looked at it again. Prior to that,
everyone just had all the cherries moving past them and they'd just try and pick out the bad ones, but they didn't always get all the bad ones out, and sometimes some of the fruit just wasn't even looked at. But because we were doing this positive selection, that every cherry that went in the box was actually perfect, and we had this gold package in a 1 kilo and a 2 kilo, that we just got this position in the market that our season coincides with the gift-giving occasion of Lunar New Year all through Asia. And it's a little bit like, you know, if someone gave you a bottle of wine for Christmas and they gave you a $15 bottle of wine, you'd think, gee, I don't mean much to them. Yeah.
Councillor
Cassidy
would like to ask you a question.
One second, I'll just finish that one. Nice to get the gift, but the person that gave you the $1,500 bottle of wine, you think, well, gee, I really am important to them. So we've just been lucky. It's more good luck than good management. Yes, we've put some decent quality product in the box as well, but we've got this position where people are prepared to pay a bit of a premium, which overcomes the labour cost of Australia and affords us that we can afford the air freight to get it there. So the biggest difference between us and the Chileans growing 700,000 tonnes of cherries for export, Tasmania doing about 4,000 tonnes, their 700,000 tonnes is all being shipped there by sea, so it means it's 30 days old by the time it gets there, where our stuff coming from Tasmania is 30 hours old by the time it gets there. We've left it on the tree longer, it's bigger, it's sweeter, it's fresher, and we can afford to use the air freight. But part of the reason we can afford the air freight is that Australia is such a wealthy country. There's so many Australians travelling overseas every year, and everyone just takes their carry-on baggage now. Not a lot of people check a lot in, so we've got the belly space in the plane in Australia is very, very cheap. So we're on average paying about $1.50 US a kilo for air freight space. Even New Zealand, it's more like $4.50 a kilo for them, and out of Chile it's more like $7 a kilo. So we're lucky that Australia is such a wealthy country that we can afford the air freight space. Sorry, your question.
Yes, sir. Three questions, if you don't mind. Two will relate to resilience. I would like to ask you what you will do for frost control when you use helicopters. And also, since Temple Hams is very prone to a bushfire and so forth, and you may have smoke contamination, have you also considered that? And then the last question that I want to ask you, thinking about council's participation, and this is visitor accommodation for Vickers.
First question, frost. So we've done some studies, and we think the frost risk here compared to our risk at Rose Garland is significantly less. Although it's higher, it's like better air drainage. Like cold air is a little bit like water; it runs to the low spots. And so, with all the modelling we've done, the frost risk up here is a lot less than what we're used to dealing with on our other sites. But even on our other sites, we've never once used a helicopter. If you drive past our Rose Garden property, you'll see there's some overhead fans there. We find them far easier to manage, less intrusive to neighbours, but we're not even expecting to need to use fans up here. Your second question was around bushfire. It's a concern to us. There's no doubt about it. We feel like we're coming with a different range of risk. We're not worried about smoke, and I don't know what it is, the difference between cherries, apples, and grapes. I think it must have something to do with the thickness of the skin. Obviously grape guys are paranoid about bushfire smoke in the lead up to harvest, and it will taint the product. And I think, but even, we're not an expert in grapes, but my understanding is a lot of those grapes that have been tainted with bushfire smoke, if you pick a grape off the bunch and eat it, you can hardly notice it. But when those grapes have been fermented, it's like the smoke taint gets concentrated and they reckon it almost smells like an ashtray. But everything we do is being sold as fresh. So even in the bad fires in the Huon, which were 4 or 5 years ago, and we had days and days of smoke, but you could not pick it up in any of our product. Now, a couple of the cider guys said you could after it was fermented, but that's 5% of our waste product is going to fermentation. So everything we do is fresh. So we're not worried about the bushfire smoke, but we are nervous about fire, and so we'll maintain fire breaks around the outside of the
house.
That third question
was something I was going to ask. Yeah, and so the third one, I don't have an answer for that at the moment. Like, at the end of the day, we've got the ability today to pack about 100 tonnes of cherries per 8-hour shift. And so, our vision effectively is to try and do that 100 tonnes. Instead of just doing it for 50 days, we want to do it for 100 days. And so it actually means we shouldn't need any more, that the peak of our staff requirements won't actually be any more than it is today. But instead of trying to find those people for 50 days, we can offer them 100 days of work. So that's attractive to the people. And so we would imagine that wherever this early site ends up being, where we want to start on the 1st of January, we'll move all our pickers to there. Then when we start, on the 1st of December, then when we start, say, at Rose Garland about the 1st of January, most of the pickers will be there at the same time as our pickers in the Huon. And then when we finish there and we start up here, we've got a fair bit of accommodation for pickers at Rose Garland. In the Huon, we're using a lot of, we're bringing people in under the PALM program, Pacific Australia Labour Migration. And there are mostly our Samoan workers that are coming, and we're accommodating them in a local backpackers. And so, yes, whether we'll need temporary accommodation up here is yet to be decided. It may be we'll just be able to relocate the people that are staying.
Do you think we'll build it? That's the planning aspect that I'm asking about.
Yeah, too early to tell. Because you can imagine, we're very different, say, to the berry growers in northern Tasmania, where they use, there's probably 3,000 or 4,000 of these palm workers coming into Tasmania for berries. But the difference for berries is they need them for 9 or 10 months, where, our harvest here at Langway Road will literally be for 30 days. So, you can't afford to, build flash accommodation that's only going to be used in 30 days.
Councillor Miller, then I'm right. I was wondering about the pickers in the housing. I'm not too sure how many days I've got to work a year to get a second year visa.
Yeah, so that's for people that are here on a working holiday visa. And so
Does that accommodate them?
Well, yes, but Jake, I would expect that under 10% of our total payroll would be people on a working holiday visa.
This day and age, yes.
So we're not as reliant on those people passing through. It has been very, very helpful in the past, but now with the PALM program, the beauty with the PALM program is, like some of the Samoans that we've got in the Huon, they're just arriving back to us now for their fourth year. And so they are so productive, they're part of our family, they're part of the team, they're part of the community, and we'd rather have returning people rather than have to train new people all the time.
I know that the potato, when we had we used to do the potato pickers, I used to work in the hotel at the time, and they had Vanuatu's.
Yes.
And they were brilliant. The only trouble is you can...
stop them from drinking. They want to have a drink.
And honestly, it's a bit off the point, but it's, you know, I feel it's the best foreign aid as a country we can give to our Pacific neighbours is to give a job. Mm. And we had the Samoan Prime Minister visit us 18 months ago, and we had still had a group of 30 of our staff there, and Jake and I had no idea what they were saying because they were speaking in their language, but these big, you know, all these Samoan boys are all the best part of 6'5" and big solid boys, and whatever the Prime Minister said to them, they were all bawling their eyes out. She was bawling her eyes out. And Jake and I were bawling our eyes out even though we didn't know what she was saying. But effectively what she was saying was just how proud they are as a country of these men that are leaving their families at home and going to Australia for 9 months at a time to support their country and to support their family and be able to build a better life for them, because they don't have the work available.
No,
we as a country need them doing the work, because it's the sort of work that a lot of Australians don't want to do.
Yeah, I know the Vanuatu runs, one of the guys there, he actually worked enough to buy his family a car.
Yeah.
And educate
their children.
That's good. Yeah. Now, because we're strapped for time, Councillor, all right, and then we'll...
So, I was just going to say, in response to Robert's comment, you might be aware we had a little boutique orchard, and when the fire went through that, it burnt the net off it, and that orchard saved the house from catching a light. And once the dust settled, we were picking cherries again, because there's some cherries. Our water went down, but we could still get some more harvest off them, and people ate them.
Yeah.
So the risk of bushfire and that, but it's in a good spot to save Hamilton from a bushfire, because your net would go before Hamilton.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
it does burn the leaves off the trees. They don't like it much, but it's still about 2 years from we come back.
Jake?
I was just going to add a little bit more on the particular accommodation, just to manage expectations. So we tend to get, particularly with farm workers, we get much better results. There's pros and cons of housing people on a farm, I suppose, is the first point I want to make. So, to manage expectations, we highly unlikely we'd be coming to council in the next 3 or 4 years saying we want to build a pickers accommodation for 200 or 300 people on a property like that. Reasons for that being, we just wouldn't get the use we would need out of that sort of investment. We're talking about a sort of 30-day harvest. It's highly unlikely you'd be looking to invest that sort of capital on a property like that, because you're just not going to get the return on it. Secondly, particularly with the farm workers who are becoming a bigger part of our base, we get a much better, you get much better results housing those sort of workers in communities. When they're stuck out on farms, it becomes more difficult to manage. They don't get the same connection to the community. They're not spending their money at the local supermarket, at the local shops. They're not joining the local church groups. They're not joining the local sporting groups. So I would say with the sort of mix of labour that we're using now, and that we'll continue to use as our scale grows, you know, it would probably be something similar to like we've got at Rose Garden, where we do have some on-site camping type accommodation for the workers who that suits, so you know, some of your backpackers and whatnot. But to manage expectations, it would be very unlikely you'd see an application before you of us wanting to make significant investment in accommodation facilities on that property.
Councillor,
all right then, Cassidy.
So, is there a way that council might be able to work with you? There's a showground just down here that's got about 7 toilets there, and it's got showers, which you've got to run to hunt the sheep out before you use them. there's plenty of space there for camping,
yeah.
And the show society wants it early March, which is probably be finished by then, wouldn't it?
Probably not quite. So two or three things. One is, you know, that's one of the barriers to entry to this business is that it's quite a long time between the planting and the harvest.
So we're
planting about 50. So the bit that's in the blue there is most of that's being planted at the moment. The two bottom bits of blue are already planted, and probably by the end of next week the rest of the blue will be planted. So there's about 45 or so hectares being planted this year. The other colours, the other varieties, there's about another 100 hectares there that will be planted next year. But ordinarily with cherries, we find it's about the fourth week before we pick a crop. So we're 2025, so we're probably 2029 before we're seeing our first revenue and first harvest come. So it's not about the change in a hurry, but yeah, the idea of something like that.
Council's looking for an excuse to do spend some money there.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to engage on that, and I think that's
subject to budgetary approval.
Well, it's certainly, you know, you pricked our ears up.
There's plenty of ground there, and there's plenty of space and corners.
Councillor Cassidy, then we'll have to move on to the presentation. Sir, in response to your issue about housing on farm versus not, what my thoughts were, we have a critical shortage of visitor accommodation throughout the service down at Lowe's, Hamilton, and Bothwell, as an example. So, you know, instead of building useless accommodation on a farm, could you consider building it within the town, let's say either a hotel type style or a motel type style or individual properties that could end up being leased, rented, etc. when you're finished with them? You know, this way you win, we win. You know, we want to invite more younger people to town. You know, if we don't build more accommodation here, invite more people here, these will become ghost towns. So those are my thoughts, if you could keep that.
And we agree. Like, if you're going to invest in bricks and mortar buildings to accommodate people, you know, to make an investment like that, you need to be confident of earning some revenue from them for 75 or 80% of the year. We've also recently acquired a property, a cherry block around the Baskerville Raceway, and there's an existing an approval in place from Brighton or something.
Brighton Council. We've got four councils now.
For accommodation there. And it sort of makes some sense on that site. We only need people for that farm for probably 30 days. But from there, we're very close to the berry operation at Sorrell that needs people for an extended period of time. You know, the labour requirements for the grape guys that sort of after cherries, although now more on the moving towards mechanical harvest. But there is no doubt, you know, to invest in bricks and mortar accommodation, we'd need something. We'd need people to put in there for part of the rest of the year to justify the investment.
So, will there be an opportunity for local employment?
Oh, absolutely. And we've that's already started. So, I don't know, what have you got up there today? Probably 7 or 8 people. And literally every one of those is lives within a 10-kilometre radius of here.
That's brilliant.
And it was interesting, you know, we were, I'm sure he won't mind me mentioning his name, Jack Beakey rang me when he heard we bought the property and he said, oh, now we're going to have to work together, there's no labour resources up here and you're going to find it really challenging. Well, quite honestly, the team Q's been able to build, we've been so impressed. He's got some absolutely fantastic people, people, and again, you know, we, in every respect, we feel, I'm not religious, but we feel blessed to be here. It's like it's all meant to be, like that. How these people have come out of the woodwork and the loyalty and commitment that they've all shown towards Q, it's just been fantastic. So,
yeah,
That's good news. We've got stupid booths that's now closed. Now, one of the buildings we put into it to regenerate the garden, we use it as an agricultural school.
Interesting.
Now, if you're here on board, then that's another...
Well, I would have thought, this is a bit of a guess, but I would have thought in 3 or 4 years' time, you know, when the place is close to coming into production, like obviously there's a peak of workload at the moment of planting and irrigation and all that sort of stuff, and that'll drop off a little bit while the trees are growing and then it'll increase again. But yeah, I think the permanent workforce up here will probably end up being about 10 people year round, and then we'll need a few more during the spring and then a lot during harvest. So, but even still, there's still that need for that permanent workforce. And as I say, there's queues down a fair few of those guys already, or guys and girls, and they're going really well.
Right, we need to...
I'll keep going quickly. I said I've got 2 separate presentations, but it might really depend on time, and this first one's just purely on the Upper Howley project. If you want me to quickly flip through a little bit more about our family and what we do, we can do that as well. This was Q&I with the first load of machinery arriving the day after we bought the place. I was so excited this first day that Q put the ripper in the ground I'm not going to say there's no rocks on the farm, but this part, you could have dug down 3 metres and not found the rock. Other parts are not quite the same. We feel like we've been able to be a service provider to the aquaculture industry. So this was a photo that I took from Storm, and we've been able to use a lot of recycled pipe out of the aquaculture industry. So our biggest challenge with this whole purchase was we bought that property without any water, and so there's a fair risk in that. You know, we knew the proximity to the Derwent, and we were hoping we may have been able to do something with the River Clyde Trust, but it ended up making more sense to do something ourselves. So we've built the main pipeline, with the tremendous, I've got to say it again, but the tremendous, tremendous cooperation from our neighbours, particularly George Shea and the Jones family, to help us get the first pipeline, 7 kilometres of 400 and 450 millimetre pipeline from the lake up through George's, up Langlois Road on Jones's, and then to our place into the first main dam. Some of the pens, so the salmon companies have loved us because we did all the work. All they did was pull the pens up beside the water. We've pulled them ashore. We've cut them all up and used the bits we could use and put the rest in piles for them for recycling. And one of the guys from Huon Aquaculture texted me at one stage. He said, "Your guys have done more in a week than my guys have done in a year." Wouldn't allow us to pay them a cent for any of it. They were just happy that the pipe was going to be recycled and reused, because otherwise it was a waste product for them. Obviously a big job to join it all, so poly welding there to put it all together. This was the first dam we built, so we're talking, Anthony, about the elevation. So we're pumping out of the lake that's 75 metres up to the first dam that Mick Hall's built in front of the shearing shed at Howley, and that first dam is the full supply level's about 195 metres above sea level, so that's one stage of pumping to come up 120 metres and 7 kilometres. And then we have a second stage of pumping out of that dam up to this one. This is what we call the buffer dam. So this one's only going to hold about 25 megalitres, and that's really just be enough for 2 or 3 days' water. And then we re-pump from that one out to the block. I talked about how lucky we feel. This is a photo in the bottom of the main dam, and we just couldn't believe, there's the other risk for us in coming to an area that we're new to. Mm-hmm. Are we going to find the dam building materials we need? Well, the next photo, I think, the material that we dug the keyway into was solid rock. It couldn't have been more perfect. And right there beside it, we had the best clay making, had the best dam making clay you could ever possibly imagine. So that all worked out really well.
That never happens, Howard. I might let you know.
So we saw before where Q was putting that first rip mark in. Then this is a mound plough that we then come through with to make the mounds that we're going to plant into. Again, that's a spot, not much rock in that one, Q. I'll turn that volume down because that won't, you won't be able to hear that anyway. But you can see in that one, that's being a portrait photo, it's not ideal, but you can see the size of some of these rocks. And this was in the worst, what we thought was the worst part of the farm. Originally we thought, oh, we'll save this bit and put some sheds on it rather than use it for planting. But you can see on the back, so it's a 280 horsepower tractor, but there's a rock crusher on the back. And we've basically put rocks through there three times the size of a basketball and turned them into blue metal. It's probably a $450,000 setup by the time the tractor and the rock crusher. And most of the time, Q, you're only travelling about half a kilometre an hour, so it's pretty slow. But it could turn that really rough ground into ground we could use. We did end up going through some of the worst patches and going through with a sieve bucket with the excavator to take the worst of them away beforehand, but that worked out. And there's the difference. You can see the rocks is a bit we haven't got to, and you look back where we've just been, and you can hopefully grow babies in it. Mick Hall, 60, I don't know how old Mick is, must be in his early 60s, but this is where we're putting the outlet pipes through the bottom of the dam wall, and all these young blokes around standing watching Mick do all the work, which probably doesn't surprise us.
Yeah.
Again, not the best photo, but you can see this is the keyway for the main dam, and so we've been down into solid rock. The white you can see there's a bit of bentonite, so where the solid rock joins the first of the clay, they put a bit of bentonite in that any moisture gets in the clay, in the bentonite that expands to the clay to help seal it. We have used the clay for the core, we've treated that clay with a bit of gypsum as well, because the biggest risk we've got with the dam is the water out of Meadowbank.
Mm-hmm.
It is the purest water in the world. There is not a hint of salt in it, and so that can sometimes can cause problems with a washing of clay particles. But the little bit of gypsum in with it helps us hold all together. We literally spent 5 months talking to Department of State Growth around putting our pipeline. We wanted to drill under the road, and we wanted to use a Class 16 sleeve pipe and then put our other pipe through there. And they wore me down. In the end, they said, oh, we want you to dig the road up. No, we don't want to dig the road up. That's more intrusive to the other people. It's not as good a solution. So what they asked us to put in, instead of a Class 16 pipe, poly pipe, we wanted to put in with no joins in it all the way. They wanted us to put a Class 4 concrete pipe that won't do anything if it did have a problem, but we put a Class 16 pipe through the inside of it. But yeah, what should have been 2 hours of bureaucracy took 5 months.
Yeah.
And we gave them the solution they wanted, which was a inferior solution, but I couldn't be bothered fighting with them anymore.
So, Howard, can I ask you,
have
you bumped into the bureaucracy of
Tasmed work? Oh, I'll get to that one. I'll get to that one. This is the best video I took. Plenty of diesel being used that day. I think those scrapers, and I think they got 700 horsepower in the front and 700 in the back, and then they joined together. V8 dozer there working, so, yeah, Mick's done a fantastic job with the dam. And this is down on George's at the lake, start of one of the pump shed pads, and you can see the end of the pipeline coming up from there, lifting the pump pumps down into place. That was the photo we saw at the start. This is Dad standing in front of, so this is the buffer dam pump shed, so there's a pump shed of each buffer dam. This was an exciting day. I think I've got a specs of space there. This was the first water coming out the end of the pipeline, and so after 7 kilometres and 120 metres lift, not too much rubbish. You notice that was a possum just went past. Okay. The poor old possum had had a free water slide. Okay. And we don't know whether he's come the whole 7 kilometres all the way from the lake, but he was pretty dazed and confused when he got there.
He paid for his ride.
He didn't pay for his ride. Here's Q putting in the first ceremonial first few trees going in the ground. So tractors are all controlled with GPS to drive them down a straight line. Can't quite make it out, but Q's placing the trees there on a plate, and then the GPS drops the plate so the trees are in line up and down the row and across the row. So when we come back and have to put infrastructure in, the trees are always in the spot they're supposed to be in. Howard, what's the flow rate?
The first dam.
So we should, there's about 5 megalitres a day, but that was with the one pump. We do, I'll get back to Jim's question because the two tie in together. So when we first went to TAS Networks, the day after we settled the base, so that was I think the 15th of February or thereabouts, and we put our applications in for what we wanted to do with power.
Well,
we eventually got power, so the power is connected on the farm now, but what did that happen about 10 days ago, Q? And that's as a result of me literally ringing TAS Networks 3 times a week for that full 6 months. And I just cannot comprehend, you know, we've got a government that says we're open for business and we want to attract investment, but the government business enterprises are absolutely vicious.
And TAS Networks not very fussy about the decimal point, is it?
Oh, well, so someone asked me yesterday.
Mostly too far to the right.
Well, someone asked me yesterday, so at Upper Howley, it was 221,000 we had to pay them for 2 transformers and 9 poles. And it was, you know, they gave us a deadline. I actually met them after about 4 months when we had no action. I met them up there, or had 4 of them meet them there, and I basically said, look, I need a commitment from you as to when we're going to have power on here, because if you can't give me a commitment, we're going to stop. We're going to stop work and because we couldn't take the risk. In the end, they gave us a commitment of date, which they were out by about 2 months. And then at the same time, we put an application in for George's problem. So George has already got a power connection there.
Yeah.
All we wanted to do was pull down his 300 kVA transformer, put up a 500, we needed one more pole. You'd think that would be an easy job. Should take...
You know, ask Dan Steve how difficult it is to get a power pole moved to Bob.
Well, so we are still waiting for them. They told me yesterday that they'll have it connected at George's in a month's time, but we've had to put a generator down there and provide our own temporary power to get some water to get started. So, yeah.
Councillor Cassidy, and then we'll have to wrap up. I'm sorry about that.
You bring up a very important problem and a huge frustration for council. And it's us trying to get things done by the various government business enterprises. I would strongly encourage you, if you have a spare moment, to contact the Premier and the various ministers and let them know your experience. If you're having this type of problem, it's, you know, councils are often blamed by the federal government and the state government for being roadblocks and obstructionists and so forth, but it's not us. It's the state government and the business, government business enterprises. And I would really appreciate if you provide
I've had strong interest from Kerry Vincent, and And prior to the election, I was telling him about some of the challenges we were having with the Department of State Growth, and he's across our challenges with, so that he'll be able to probably have an influence on that now, and obviously he's the Minister for Local Government as well. Mm-hmm. And he understands, I think he'll be able to be a very effective minister. We were disappointed to see Jane Howard lose the Prime Industry portfolio, but she's also across some of the challenges. I haven't probably engaged with Nick Dygan as the Energy Minister, but Kerry Vincent's very clearly told him about some of the challenges. And even yesterday, when they finally confirmed when they'll be able to put the power down here, they tried to make it sound like they were doing us the biggest favour in the world. We've had to cancel other jobs to be able to get it done before the end of the year. Now, this is after they've had an application for 7 months. It is not that hard. Like, literally what they have to do at George's is about 8 hours' work. But, you know...
Yeah, but rest assured we pass this up the line to the people. I think they hear it all too often. They don't know what to do is the problem.
So only about two or three more pictures. So this is in the pump shed at the buffer dam. You can see the pumps, and because the irrigation is through drip lines, that so the drippers don't block down the right hand sides, the filters for taking any impurities out. We were spending about $2,000 a day on diesel for the 10 or 12 days we had to partly fill the dam, but that's sort of what it looks like now. This is down at the lake with the couple of the bottom ones, the pump shed, the top one, we just kept the switchboards and the electrical gear just a little bit higher above the lake. And I think these would be the last, I thought that one was a video. So this is only last week with the two planters going side by side, and so basically similar to what you saw in the first video. By this point we've got all the irrigation submains in, so after we put the tree in the ground, then all we've really got to do is run the lateral tube of the dripper line down the road and they're ready to get a drink. I think that's the last one. So yeah, maybe not today, but if there had been time, I was going to give another quick presentation just about the rest of our business and what we do. But the 30-second summary is we're a fourth generation. The previous three generations prior to me were all apple growers. When my father started in the apple business, there were 2,000 apple growers in Tasmania. There's probably 10 of us left. Mm-hmm. And so we've had to adapt, improvise and overcome for 80 years to stay in business. And my final year of study at Marcus Oldham in 1994, I looked at the opportunity for growing cherries, where we're really looking for another horticultural crop. You know, we've all heard of Tasmania referred to as the Apple Isle, and that used to be that we counter-seasonally supplied apples to the rest of the world. But because our wage rates are so out of whack with the rest of the world, we can't do that anymore. All the apples we grow now are all sold in Australia. But we were looking for an opportunity of another horticultural crop that we can export around the world, and so the overnight success of the last 30 years has been building a cherry business, and we remain confident in that, and we'll continue to invest.
Thank you so much, Harold. Would you be interested in coming back in 2 months? That would be back at Hamilton and giving us a bit of an update.
I'll be able to come to the right place.
Yeah. And we'll send you a map.
Yeah, thank you very much. And again, as I say, maybe at that stage, you know, we'll have little trees with shoots all over, and maybe we'll have a little bit of a drive. So.
I think councillors would like a site visit.
Excellent.
Yeah.
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 Really,
I'll
bring
the cherries along
the tree. They won't be on the tree at that point. But the other thing you may like to do, you may like to visit us in January, come for a field trip to McEwen. Then you'd get some cherries and see the operation in practice and in full speed.
Do you have a contact card?
No, I don't, but I'll share my details. Yeah.
That was very, very good. Thank you so much. All righty.
We've got to resume standing orders.
We'll then resume standing orders. Moved by Councillor Miller, second by Councillor Hall. Those in favour of resuming standing orders, that is carried. Thank you.
And then we need to go back to 17.
So we need to, thank you so much. Thank you, guys, thank you. So we'll need to go back to item 17 on the agenda.
Do I have a move on?
May I have a move, please? Councillor Hall, or second to Councillor Honour. Those in favour, carried, thank you. We're on to 17, just for a moment.
Okay, 17.1.
Now we do have. Unless you
want to.
I think we'll have to go back again, won't we? I've introduced Andrew.
Sorry.
So we need to go back. Sorry, we need to go back again.
I'll just delete that last motion.
Okay. So we need to.
So we are out.
Thank you.
We're still at 7.2.
Okay, we're still at 7.2. Related parties' declarations. No, I thought it was there.
7.2.
Rightio. So I would now like to welcome Dr. Andrew Cole. Yes, Andrew. Andrew, would you have time to have a couple with us before your presentation?
Sure, I'm at your disposal.
I will have a cup of tea then, how's that? So we'll have a 10-minute break for a cuppa and back here, please. Now 11:10. All right, 10-minute break, please.
Thank you.
Go that one. All righty. Thanks, councillors. I'm quite happy to introduce Dr. Andrew Cole. From the University of Taz, and he's a professor of astronomy and director of Green Hill Observatory. I will just go around the table and introduce you to councillors, Andrew. May I call you Andrew?
Yes, absolutely.
Deputy Mayor Jim Allwright, Councillor Yvonne Miller, Councillor Anthony Archer, Councillor Juliana, Councillor Robert Cassidy, Councillor Jim Hall, Acting General Manager Stephen Mackey, Katrina's our CEO, we've got Steve Loring over there who's a community member, and we've got our reporter Damien. So if you'd like to just give us a short intro of what you'd like to speak about. Thank you very much.
So Mayor, councillors, community members, thank you very much for the invitation to be here. It's a pleasure to come talk. I have to thank Councillor Cassidy for the invitation. I understand he has a motion regarding to planning schemes for the future of lighting and with some statewide applications going to many councils. It's an issue that's close to me professionally as well as personally. So I should start out by saying that my views here today are my own as a professional astronomer, scientist, and don't represent the official position of the University of Tasmania in any kind of legal or binding sense. They want me to clear that up at the beginning. I guess regardless of the specifics of any individual proposal, I think you would have recognized that we're in a time of really rapid change across lots of areas of society, and in the context of lighting and dark sky presentation, and the night sky that I showed my kids, or hopefully in a few years, my grandkids, it's not the same nice guy that I looked at with my dad and my granddad. The rate of light pollution worldwide is increasing by a few percent every year, and while that doesn't sound like a huge number, add up a few years, it starts to get very significant. So the night sky can be a source of inspiration and wonder, both for inspiring education or just a lifelong feeling of trying to understand what's going on in the world. But it's also, you know, part of everyone's human heritage, and it's also something that you can use to generate economic activity, jobs in astrotourism or aurora tourism, that kind of thing. So my main concern as a professional astronomer is the impact of light pollution on observatories. And we operate an observatory probably about 40 Ks that way. We have a 1.3 meter telescope and a 50 centimeter telescope, and we're participating.
So where is the observatory?
Oh, yeah, so that's at near Spring Hill.
Yes.
On Busy Tier.
Yeah, I know. I wondered what that sign's there, but.
Yeah, so if you are driving south along the Midland Highway, coming down past after Oldham, if you look up at the right time, kind of off the left, you'll be able to see it about 5 Ks down off the highway.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we are just on the edge of where the light pollution from the northern suburbs of Hobart kind of would impact. So we look straight up, and we have very, very good dark skies. We can rival best places in Australia on a clear night. If we look over to the south, we're a bit hampered by that. Things don't get done, or will be much less precise or much more inefficient. So that represents a bit of a loss to science, a bit of a loss economically, in that, you know, we've invested quite a bit in building this facility and I'd like to be able to continue using it. That said, Tasmania has excellent sky quality. Over much of the state, it is quite dark and close to its, you know, natural kind of pre-human state in a lot of ways. And that's important. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
How far, in terms of distance, before light becomes a problem? For instance, you know, the city of Hobart, we can see 40, 50 kilometres away travelling in at night, the sky reflecting. What is the spatial distance generally that light can become a problem?
It depends on the type of lighting.
And the intensity?
The intensity, the density, and the style. So look at these. They're sending a lot of light upward at the ceiling. That's great for in here because it's diffused and it's reflecting back down. But if you had lights like this outdoors, they wouldn't be very good. They wouldn't be illuminating the spot underneath. They'd be illuminating the sky. And then that brightness scatters away, and you can see it for 40 or 50 Ks. I've been places in New South Wales at observatories where it's a 7-hour drive from Sydney, and you look out, and there it is. You can see the glow.
Right. Wow.
So wow. You've got
sporting grounds,
mines, wind farms with lots of lights all on the top of them. Any kind of factory yards where people are just lighting them up nonstop 24 hours can be incredibly harmful. Domestic lighting, not so much of an issue.
But in terms of the distance that our municipality is away from your telescope, which is like 10, 15 kilometres, would that have a measurable difference in terms of if we were able to tone it down, or is it so good already that it's really not something that we'd have the influence over for your existing site at Busy Tier?
Yeah, for our existing site at Busy Tier, current conditions, except looking down towards Hobart, are quite good.
Right.
And what we'd like to do is preserve that.
Yes.
So. And what I understand of the motion for planning is for impacting on future lighting. So we're not talking about turning off everybody's lights or going back to the Stone Age. It's finding the balance of what needs to be illuminated, when it needs to be illuminated, and what's the most efficient way of doing that. So it can be about saving money as well. If you have your light directed where it needs to be instead of all over the place, and if it's on when you need it on rather than 24 hours a day, then I think everyone benefits. Yeah.
Councillor Miller.
Yeah, I didn't realise that you were saying that there was lights on top of the wind towers.
I think some of them are required for aviation purposes.
Only because we've got more coming in, that's all.
Yeah, I maybe shouldn't blame any specific sector without sort of detailed knowledge. I was just trying to think of examples off the top.
No, that's fine.
So, I don't know if I'm supposed to be
responding.
Did
you say that 7 hour drive out of Sydney and you can see the lights in Sydney, or are you talking about other towns, big towns?
Oh,
7 hours.
Sort of, I mean, well, that's
outside
of Dubbo.
You're looking at Dubbo lights and blaming Sydney, is that what it is?
Well, that's a slightly different direction, but
7 hours, that'll take you to Queensland.
Only if you're alone flying.
Most of the time.
0.7 hours.
Most of the time is 0.7. Getting out of Sydney, I suppose. starting from the airport, hiring a car, heading out into Coonabarabran.
Well, that's not 7 hours.
I think we'll let the professor speak.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I guess experience shows that once a dark sky is lost, or once any environmental condition is lost, it takes quite a bit of effort to roll that back. It's much cheaper and easier to preserve the dark sky when you've got it. You're not going to Sydney and saying, all you 2 million people, you ought to turn your lights off for the benefit of a few astronomers. But if you are in an area that has something really valuable, like that night sky, then it doesn't take too much to preserve it in a way that is probably pretty good for everybody.
Councillor Miller.
No, I was about to say that last year I had the opportunity to go to Broome and did a night tour outside Broome. And I was amazed. I just couldn't believe the lights that were there. I mean, we see enough here, the stars, but what was shown out there in the desert without any light pollution was just...
Yeah.
I mean, I was gobsmacked. I just couldn't believe it.
Councillor Cassidy, then Hall.
Yes, sir. An example of... reverse light pollution, if you will. Now, Elon Musk has shot up all of these Starlink satellites, and so when you're observing a night sky, you're seeing reflected sunlight off of these in streams across the sky. This reflected sunlight is actually blocking out things that scientists want to observe, or some numpty like myself, you know, with a camera, you know, and a lens. You know, that's just an example of light pollution caused by human interference. You know, we launched all of these Starlink satellites up there for the benefit of Elon Musk. And it's just, you know, it's just caused a problem for NASA. It's caused a problem for the International Space Station. It's caused a problem for, observers like... Dr. Cole. That's just an one example I can think of.
Yeah, so I can just say that there's electromagnetic interference all across the spectrum and from a wide range of sources, and as a state or a locality or as a nation, you would just concentrate on the areas where you can have an impact. So we have artificial light at night from the ground, we have satellites, as you just mentioned. For radio telescopes, you have mobile phones and other interference. So it's not just a single source, and it's not just a single solution.
Councillor Hall.
Well, I'm a bit of a hillbilly, and I've never, ever looked for a telescope in my life. And when you look at the sky, you think a star is a star, but I didn't believe until we went up to Molina, Julie was there, Councillor Meacham, and I could not believe that a cluster of stars make one big star. I just couldn't believe what out there looks like, the depth of it. It was, and I think is what they're trying to do up there. They're trying to attach it to their business as a tourism tool. And I tell you what, I would pay and go and see it again, because what they showed on the telescopes was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Educational.
Yeah. It has a real impact on, on the public, on kids.
I've seen the rings of Saturn. Your telescope.
Okay, let's keep focused.
I'll finish, ma'am. So.
Okay, back to you.
So I guess I didn't present, I should have brought a slideshow or something, but just to kind of probably finish up, I think the design of lighting and the things like the type of lighting, like blue lights tend to be a bit worse. They scatter, they create a bit more nuisance, whereas yellower and redder lights, you might have heard red lights better for night vision, also better for scientific investigations, less interference. So those kinds of things are all things that people can control, and every bit helps.
Councillor Archer.
Would you be prepared to help guide our policy in terms of those intricacies that we're obviously not aware of?
I'd be very happy.
In terms of providing a fact sheet, that this would be our preference, for instance, for future development.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Good idea.
That sounds good. Councillor Cassidy, do you have any more to say with that one?
Well, no, except to thank you very, very much for coming to our council and taking time out of your busy day.
Oh, absolutely, my pleasure.
It was informative, and I would like to, when the mayor allows, present my notice of motion.
Yes. All right. And Councillor Cassidy has obviously done a lot of research on this, and I commend you on that, Councillor Cassidy. Many hours of research, I understand.
Yes, ma'am.
So, thank you so much. I'll give you one of my cards. And we'll move on with the motion. So the recommendation is there.
What number was the motion?
8.4. So do we need to move to item?
Do we need to move to item 8.4?
Yep.
Could I move it to item 8.4, not 84? Councillor Miller, Councillor Hall. Those in favour of moving, please raise your hands. That is carried. Now back to 8.4. This is a notice of a motion, the recommendation that Council submit notice of a motion to Legat presented at the November conference to lobby state government on behalf of 29 Council to create dark sky planning guidelines over the whole of Tasmania, as well as King Island, Flinders and Maria, modelled after the New South Wales Government's Dark Sky Planning Guideline. That's the recommendation moved by Councillor Cassidy. May I have a seconder, please, Councillor Miller? As the mover, Councillor Cassidy, would you like to speak to this?
Yes, I would. Thank you very much for listening. I'd like to give a quick bit of a background there. There are very practical reasons for treasuring and being able to see the night sky in the Central Highlands. It should not be taken for granted. Once we close our curtains and turn off our lights and go to bed, it seems like we don't think much about it anymore. But I can assure you that there's some of us here in the Central Highlands and throughout Tasmania that are probably up until 4:30 in the morning or later, observing the night sky. Firstly, there is a significant Aboriginal cultural aspect to this. The Aboriginal inhabitants of this land, they were Australia's, and I might argue, the world's first true astronomers. And it's evidenced by many petroglyphs. And lately, there's peer-reviewed papers on this fact about the Aboriginal astronomers. I first wrote to MLC Craig Farrell and Greens Minister Cassie O'Connor back in May 2021 regarding creating legislation. I've also been taking photos of the night sky since I came to live in Tasmania about 15 years ago because I could actually see the heavenly bodies. My photos would not be possible if there was a significant amount more light pollution from city and town lighting, security lighting, vehicles with their poorly aimed LED light bars and spotlights, pointed skyward, unshielded street lights, path lights. Also, as Dr. Cole suggested, that we should consider any additional tourism opportunity for astrophotography and aurora photography. It's quite the thing. There's Facebook groups and so forth on it. Regarding my notice of motion, again, that the council submitted a notice of motion to LGAT, presented the November conference to lobby state government on behalf of 29 councils to create a dark sky planning guideline over the entire state of Tasmania as well as the other islands. And there is precedent for this from other councils and state governments, which I have included as attachments, as well as photographs from the International Space Station of two large cities, as an example, Shanghai and New York. But also, I provided a photograph from the International Space Station of Tasmania, and clearly you can pick out the well-illuminated Hobart, Devonport, Lonnie, et cetera, et cetera. As an interim measure, Central Highlands Council should designate the municipalities of dark sky zone or area or community where all future outdoor lighting be shielded from spilling light skyward, or light pollution, if you will. The policy will incorporate current best practices, including the integration of smart lighting technology, shielding, strengthened environmental protections, and requirements with an aim to reduce artificial light at night, support ecological sustainability, and enhance the municipality's appeal as a destination for dark sky and aurora australis tourism. The policy would ensure council continues to lead in responsible lighting management, community education, which I'm happy to provide, and long-term protection of the region's natural sky. I don't know if my fellow councillors have seen in the Hobart Mercury on the 12th of October, there was a very, very nice photo of an aurora by Martin George. Well, actually, it was Kelly Malone, but the article is by Dr. Martin
George. So, Councillor Cassidy, without being rude, we're still in the recommendation. Can you wrap it up, please?
And I just wanted to point out another article that was in last Sunday's paper about dark skies and spotlight on tourism. And I, generally speaking, agree with Land Ambassador, who's the president of Dark Skies, except I don't think that we should just designate the southwest of Tasmania, because who will travel there? It's such a long distance, let's say from Devonport, getting off the boat or the line or even Hobart. So my, that's why I framed this so that we should consider the entire state of Tasmania and the outer islands.
Thank you. As a seconder, Councillor Miller, do you have anything?
Yes, just to be sure, the reason I seconded this was because I could see the possibility, if it was advertised enough, for places like Maina to really go ahead, because places like Maina have got a lot of accommodation up there,
yep,
for tourists. Mm-hmm. But not only marina, it's probably something we can look at with other the other smaller little towns like Body Park, Arthur's Lake, those little areas that really haven't got much, but we can designate and help bring those communities some economic growth.
Okay.
So yeah, I like the idea of, especially after seeing the dark skies in WA, that was just magnificent.
Thank you. Councillor, all right, you had your hand up.
So I think there's good potential here, once we have a workshop, to understand. If we've got to develop policy, we've actually really got it impacting the community at some level. We've got to explain that. So that's the policy. We've got to explain it to the community, so councillors have to be across it. The process of getting it up to the GAT is that the mayor has to present it to the GAT.
A councillor with me, I believe.
Sorry?
I can take a councillor with me.
That's not fine. But
Councillor Cassidy speaks.
The council's got to present it at the GAT.
Correct.
Wouldn't it be better to... Let's have a workshop with Dr. To help us at the workshop and start getting some points down for policy. Wouldn't that be a better way of dealing with it?
I might look at the acting GM on this. What's your thoughts?
When the motion was read out, it finished at the guidelines. And quite clearly there's two parts to this motion. One is putting it to an LGAT conference, and the second part is developing a policy.
Yeah.
Now, the options are we deal with both in this one motion, or we deal with the LGAT one, and then work on a policy at a future date.
So you're saying cut it into two. Just a minute,
yeah,
please.
That's the reason why I say it, is that as opposed to doing both parts of this, do the first bit, which is to the LGAT.
Yeah, I'd still prefer to have a workshop.
Can I just hear Stephen, please?
It's only about,
Councillor?
4 months from November to the next again.
Can I hear Stephen, please, Councillor? Yeah. So Stephen, what are you recommending we cut the...
My suggestion is that you do the first bit, and that we workshop the second part. Now, the LGAT conference, the motions have got to be there 35 days before the meeting.
Yeah, so that's pretty soon.
Yeah, correct.
Just a minute, Councillor Archer and Hall, but I would like to ask Councillor Cassidy first if he's happy that we divide the motion, the recommendation.
Yes.
Into two.
I'm satisfied with that because if we stop around, we'll miss an opportunity.
All right. So what would that entail, Stephen? The first part would stop it.
As long as the mover and seconder are quite happy that it's the first bit that we're dealing with.
Are you happy with that, Councillor Miller?
Yes, I'm happy with that.
Thank you. Yes.
All right. So I'll go back to Councillor Laws, and I've got Councillor Archer and Hall ready to speak.
Mayor, reading the guidelines in New South Wales, I'm concerned about the detail. Look at the guidelines in New South Wales. If you've got a skylight in any building, it needs to be shuttered and or regulated of a night. You imagine the increase in building costs of implementing that change. For what gain? Is it, and that's advice we'll need to have provided to us. And so I very much agree with the Deputy Mayor that we need to workshop this and get some more detail. It refers to footpaths policy. It refers to roading, that we can't have lighting in certain areas. It refers to lighting around sites. So it's not a simple matter of just endorsing the New South Wales policy. If that's the case, I'll vote against the motion. And so I think we need to get this right. We need to deliver the outcome without too significant an impost, or without getting a measured impost.
Thank you.
And so I'd just like to speak on behalf of what the Deputy Mayor is proposing.
So, Councillor Hall?
I'm going to agree with what Councillor Archer said. I think is we've got to iron it out. It's got to be...
So let's go back to Councillor Cassidy and the second to Councillor Miller. and we are looking at dividing it and putting the first part up. Is that correct, Stephen? So we're putting the first part up as a recommendation now. So as the mover, Councillor Cassidy, if we put the first part up, are you happy with that and have any comment?
I'm certainly happy with any effort that we make because even if we present this to LGAT and LGAT blesses it, this still will end up having to go to the government for them to massage. Now then, the guidelines that were provided, that's not just one guideline that I provided. There are many. I actually included a second set of attachments for Stephen Mackey for this motion, but at some point it becomes too voluminous and we're not going to read all of that stuff. Now, the New South Wales guidelines, those are guidelines. There are other councils in South Australia and so forth who've already got policies, etc., in place. If it was not too hard for them, it should not be too hard for us. Mm-hmm. Also, there's two councils here in Tasmania already that have implemented dark skies. So why does it have to be, you know, too hard for us? I suggest.
So, go ahead, Councillor Cassidy, you're closing it.
Also, I want to say further that there are places here in Central Highlands that already have featured dark skies and astronomy events. Rathmore, just down the street, as an example. Cali Lions had a couple of events there, and I was invited to both, but I couldn't attend. Myself, I've made photographs right from my backyard in Bothwell. And further down the street. There's many places throughout the Central Highlands that could take advantage of tourism opportunities. So that's, if we want to bring money into the towns and into the municipality, then why shouldn't we pursue one more opportunity?
Thank you. Now, the recommendation that I'm reading now is that Council submit notice of the motion to LGAT presented at the November conference to lobby state government on behalf of 29 councils to create dark sky planning guidelines. And we stop it there and don't add the rest. That's correct, isn't it, General Manager?
Correct.
So I am moving...
get that clarified? That so we're not using the language modelled after New South Wales governments?
We're not using that. We're stopping after guidelines.
That's what we'll workshop.
We'll workshop the other part.
I see. Thank you for the clarification.
So we're putting it in two parts now. So the first part is the one that I'm moving for the recommendation today. The second part is to be workshopped, correct, Steve?
So it goes to the guide from that and to the guidelines, which includes modelled after the New South Wales government. And the next part we'll workshop is an interim measure for Central Highlands.
So are we all clear on what we're...
There's two lots of guidelines. So we're going from that council submit notion of motion down to modelling after the New South Wales...
No.
So we're stopping at the dark sky planning guidelines.
Correct. That's where we're stopping.
Okay.
And the rest is workshop. Right. So we've put it in two parts now. So now... Are we all clear on what we're moving?
I'll read it out. That Council submit notice of motion to LGAT presented at the November conference to lobby state government on behalf of the 29 councils to create the dark sky planning guidelines.
Yep.
Finishes there.
Yep.
And it finishes there. So that's the one is up now. It was moved by Councillor Cassidy, second by Councillor Miller. Those in favour of the first part, please raise your hands. Okay, so we're all in favour.
Should be workshopped.
Councillor Allwright is against, and the rest, Councillor Cassidy, Miller, Archer, Honour, Hall and Triffitt are for. So that goes through, and I will be asking council to support me taking Councillor Cassidy with me to that part of the conference, and I will probably ask him to speak a very short paragraph because that's all we're allowed at the GAT, so it has to be very short and sweet. So we can work on that one anyway. And the workshop is on the 7th, so perhaps we can cover it on the 7th, which will give us some information to take.
Yep.
So that's the way we're looking at it at the moment. Alrighty, so that is carried. And thank you so much, Andrew, for coming along. And yeah, we'll see how we all go with this, and perhaps we'll have you come back soon.
I'd be happy to.
Yep, thank you. So where are we now, Katrina?
We need to move back to item 7.
Like a dog's breakfast today. Could I have a mover back to item 17? Councillor Honour, Councillor Hall, those in favour, raise your hands please, that is carried. Item 17 was operational. 17.1 is council committees and representative. The council consider, due to the passing of the late Tony Bailey, council members to take his position on the following committees. Now, I've had some interest from councillors. So the audit panel is, where are we? Audit panel is Deputy Mayor Allwright, vacant, what has it got? Vacant Councillor Meacham proxy. Oh, there's a vacant
position.
There's a vacant position and Councillor Meacham's a proxy. So I think we'll take, I might get Katrina to do this with us, we'll take those interested in going on the panel and it'll have to be voted around the table. Who's interested?
Can I make a comment? We've already got a proxy, but that proxy has, this is just the audit panel, that proxy has expressed an interest in becoming full-time member, so, which would normally be the case, and so we should actually vote him up, shouldn't we?
I don't think we can if he's not in the room, can we?
Well, you can. He can be nominated.
He can be nominated.
Yeah, yeah.
And then open it up, I mean, that would be the normal procedure, wouldn't it?
Katrina will help us with this. So we're taking now nominations for the audit panel.
Excuse me, sorry, Mary.
I'm
just reading. It says, Councillor Meacham has expressed interest in stepping into this role as he's currently the proxy, so therefore he must have already expressed interest if it's here.
That's my point, just to formalise Councillor Meacham's role on the committee, on the audit panel, and Councillor Hall has expressed an interest in going on the audit panel.
Is Councillor Meacham automatically can go in now as a proxy or not? Because
The thing being is that you can call nominations.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're calling nominations for the audit panel.
I'm putting my hand up now.
For the audit?
Yes.
Councillor Hall?
But only from the blessing of the council. You know what I mean? So.
I'd like to follow through with Deputy Mayor's suggestion and nominate Meacham as expressed interest in doing it if he's not in the room.
Can we do that?
Yeah, and yes, you can. And Councillor Hall can still put that in the ring as well.
Absolutely. And it'll go as a vote. So
you have to vote, yes, correct.
So we've got Hall and Meacham for the audit panel, and I'll get Katrina to record. So, are you ready, Katrina, to do this?
Mm-hmm. Well, it really depends whether you want to make it a secret ballot or whether you want to put your hand up.
I reckon we should just send you an email before we vote.
No, it has to be done now. Okay, so we've got the nominations Councillor Hall, we've got the nominations for Councillor Meacham. So I guess we could have show of hands.
Well, that's
alright. So those that nominate Councillor Hall, I'll have to take names, Katrina.
So I won't vote.
No. Well, can he vote for himself or not?
No, I prefer not to.
Well, there you go.
Okay, we don't need to take names, it's just numbers if we can.
Okay, raise your hands in favour of Councillor Hall going on the Audit Committee.
So is this for proxy or...?
No, it's for the committee. See? Okay, so there's Councillor Cassidy, Councillor Honour and myself, that's three.
Three.
Oh, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that means that one's...
What do we do with that one? Oh, gee whiz.
Well, can we reword it? So,
no, we can't change it.
Is it easier to defer it to the next meeting when we have full numbers?
Okay. Didn't want to, but...
And full numbers. We have
the numbers.
Well...
So, that was for Councillor Hall.
Okay, put your hand up.
Councillor Meacham.
If you're in favour of Councillor Meacham going on there, please raise your hand, I need to see. So it's 1, 2, 3. We've got a long way with that, haven't we?
It doesn't have to be the same. In other words, you could vote on both independently, couldn't you? Now, in my case, what I'd like to see Councillor Hall on there and Councillor Meacham, where's that fight with you?
Well,
Councillor
Meacham is a proxy.
He's a proxy.
What happens with your audit panel? You can only have two councillors.
And independent.
Yes. If you extend it out to more councillors, then you have to have another independent person on the committee.
So what's your advice, Acting GM, on this? It's 3-3.
Well... put it bluntly, my view is that we're likely to have another councillor in the not too distant future.
Correct.
Wouldn't it be more prudent to actually hold this off until that new councillor comes on board?
Yeah, well, why not?
Would they even know who we are?
They may do, they may not.
So are we talking about deferral?
I think it should be deferred until the new councillor comes on board. That's a personal opinion.
This can happen.
He's going to give us the numbers anyway.
Well, yeah, and most probably Councillor Meacham is likely to be back as well, so then you can change your mind about whether you don't vote or do vote.
Okay, for the audit panel, would I have somebody move?
Can I make a comment? Councillor Meacham is still proxy, so we correct. Still have... the audit panel meeting next week or whenever it is.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I have asked, could that be deferred, that meeting?
Because of the...
Yeah.
So I'll move the motion.
You'll move for deferral, Councillor Miller. So it's defer. Yeah. It's the whole...
It's
going to
be the next. The whole motion. Yeah.
The whole motion.
So Councillor Miller's moving deferral. Who seconded that? Anyone?
So that's the whole motion. That's yes. The whole three all yes. Committees.
That's
all
for committees. The audit panel. It's for the independent living unit and the plant committee. So Councillor Miller has moved that. Councillor Cassidy has seconded that. Alrighty. Those four. Is there anyone against that? No. Well, let's carry it.
Was anyone against?
No. I think that's the best idea because, as you say, we'll have a new councillor as well who might like to be involved. And you've seen the list of councillors there and what committees they're on. So that's all good. 17.2 is related parties declarations. For actioning, Katrina.
Yeah, I have placed them around if people
complete. Okay, so could you please complete the related parties disclosures? I think that's it.
No, we've got a closed one.
Consideration of supplementary, none. Alrighty, could I have someone close, please?
Well, just before we do that, there are a couple of questions asked in the meeting in regards to... Councillor Miller asked why she wasn't designated as being outstanding rates.
No, I was also wondering if I wasn't.
Let the GM speak.
As you've stated, you paid it, so it won't be a penalty shown because it's been paid as rates income.
Oh, right.
So that's covered that one.
Okay.
The issue in regards to being $500,000 out and the concerns of that, the formula in the document is incorrect. And if you have a look at that...
Is this hieroglyphics or is this something I can look at?
There's 500,000 stated in there.
But it didn't add it up correctly.
It didn't add it up.
So
that covers your concern.
We could blame Elon Musk for that because he has a virus.
I thought I'd better raise those in open session.
Thank you very much.
I hope any ratepayers that are listening aren't concerned that there is $500,000.
Now, lunch is not here yet, is it, Katrina?
No, we've still got close to do it.
Better go on to close.
Sorry?
We've still got to go on to close.
Yeah, so we'll close the meeting now to go into close, won't we?
Yeah, we will, but we've got a mover and seconder.
Yes.
Councillor Honour, Councillor Archer, those in favour, please raise your hands. Thank you. So we're going into close. You have your closed agendas.
Right, so we're on.
Well, we reopened at 12:30.
12:25.
Oh, sorry, 12:25. Rightio. And I've read out the other.
Yeah, we've got to read it.
It's the same. I'm excited there. I'll read it again. Okay, so public release announcement. The chairperson announced that pursuant to Regulation 15.8.9 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures, Regulations 2015, and having considered privacy and confidential issues, the Council authorised the release to the public of the following discussions, decisions, reports or documents relating to the closed meeting, and that was 2.1 that the minutes be confirmed, 4.1 that the acting GM be provided with a vehicle, council vehicle, and that information to be noted, and 5.1 councillor Miller's statement.
And we close
your copy of that.
Yeah, and we close the meeting at
12:27. Thank you, councillors.